The great scientists of our world. And many other people. And of course, with some sorrow at all the death, the loss, the illness, the family members that have lost their loved ones. It's been truly horrific event for human beings, humankind.
So this morning, I'll start by mentioning that some many years ago, I, like many of you, bought a copy of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind by Suzuki Roshi. I was looking for something, but I didn't know what it was. And I carried that book around with me for quite a long time, and I was very impressed by it. But I didn't start a meditation practice. I didn't start doing what Suzuki Roshi was recommending. And I think the reason, well, it's complicated, but one of the main reasons was I didn't think I could live up to what he was talking about. I thought what he was talking about was too lofty for me, the likes of me. I didn't think I could live up to it. And maybe I had a little bit of fear, too. Fear of, anyway. And I hadn't taken the vow at that point that Dharma gates are endless, and I vow to enter them all. I hadn't taken that vow, and so I just kind of played around at the entrance way, as Dogen says. I was just playing around at the entrance way of the path, but didn't immediately enter the path. But gradually, something happened. One of the things was I met some people who weren't as intimidated by the book as I was, and started practicing with their encouragement. So, this is the benefit of Sangha. This is the benefit of people coming together, practicing together. It's hard to do it alone all the time. When we come together, we are encouraged to enter all the Dharma gates. And the one that I wanted to talk about today is kind of a continuance of what I was talking about on Monday. You've heard that. We've been studying the 16 Bodhisattva precepts. And on Monday and today I'll be talking about the third pure precept, the precept of benefiting or practicing for the welfare of all beings. In our study that we've been doing, excuse me, Suzuki Roshi's aphorism for that precept is, with purity of heart, I pledge to strive for the benefit of living beings and the whole society. I think that's pretty wonderful. And in our precept initiation ceremony, we simply say, I vow to embrace and sustain all beings. I vow to embrace and sustain all beings. So, in this in in this study that we've been looking at, one of the sources for that study is called the Brahma Net Sutra. And in that sutra, in discussion of the third pure precept, it says, the precept that embraces all sentient beings refers to compassion, mercy, joy, and equanimity. And I was really surprised about that, because those are the four Brahma Viharas, the four heavenly abodes, the four immeasurables. And we usually speak about them as loving-kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And these are quite a well-known teaching, of course, and if you go to Theravada Buddhist retreat of any kind, it's very likely that these four immeasurables will be brought up. It's a very favorite teaching in the Theravada tradition. You don't hear it so much in Mahayana text, and you know, I don't know that I might be able to say that I don't recall ever hearing a Dharma talk that in a Zen setting that discussed the four Brahma Viharas, but you're about to hear one. So I have never heard one, but I'm going to give one. I think we're about to enter all the Dharma gates, and so that's what I'm proposing to do this morning. So I had to study up a little bit to give this talk, and the text that I consulted is called the Visuddhi Magga. Have you heard of the Visuddhi Magga? It is a text, a compendium of Buddhist teachings by an ancient 5th century Indian monk, scholar monk. And what he did is, in two volumes, summarize the entirety of the Buddha's teaching. So this is a very valuable resource if you are into, you know, learning about Shakyamuni Buddha's teaching, to read the Visuddhi Magga in just two volumes, compared to the library, or the walls of texts that constitute the Pali Canon and all of the real, the related teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha and his cohorts. The Visuddhi Magga is a wonderful precept and inclusive precept of the Buddhist teaching. And one of the things that it says in that text that struck me as important to today is that the function of the four Brahma Viharas, the four immeasurable practices of loving kindness and so on, is to break down the barriers between people. Break down the barriers between people. And this seems very relevant right up to today, and will always be relevant. There's always more we can do in this direction, breaking down barriers between people. And the and specifically, of course, this was not conceived of as a kind of social program exactly for the whole society, although Suzuki Roshi says that a third pure precept is a precept for the whole society. So maybe so. But the way that it's talked about in the Visuddhi Magga is a little bit more specific. And it says that the barriers we are to break down are the barriers between ourselves, the barriers that we have, sort of within, to break those down. break down the barriers with a dearly loved one, a neutral person, and an enemy or a hostile person. So the practice is vis-a-vis these four kinds of persons. And it says first about the practice, the most ink in this section on the four Brahma Viharas is spilled on the practice of loving kindness. Loving kindness is the first one on the list and gets the most attention, apparently in the sutras and in this text that I was looking at. And the first practice of what it says about loving kindness is its function is to break down the barrier of hatred, the barrier of anger and animosity. The text says that the meditator should break up. The meditator should embark on the development of loving kindness for the purpose of secluding the mind from hate, seen as a danger, and introducing the mind to patience, seen as an advantage. The first object is of loving kindness. Again, go back to these four persons. The first object is oneself. So the first recommended practice is to break down the barrier of hate and animosity within oneself, one's own tendencies towards hate and animosity, including self-hate. And, you know, at various times, we do have a tendency to have doubts about our own worthiness, our own capacity. We lack confidence in ourselves, and we have, you know, anxiety and so forth. These are all emotions that come up in us, and that we're invited by this teaching, you know, to turn toward with loving kindness, with the attitude of loving kindness. And the formula, there's a formula in the sutra that is very simple, and I've always wondered, is that formula really up to the task? I've always had a question about that, because the formula is so simple. And the formula is simply to say, to repeat to oneself, may I be happy and free from suffering. May I be happy and free from suffering. There's a little longer one. May I keep myself free from enmity, affliction, and anxiety, and may I live happily. So I've always wondered, is that really enough? Just to repeat that phrase, is that really going to do the job? And I think when we're, you know, feeling depressed, when we're not feeling confident, when we're turning toward ourselves or others with negative emotions, well, it's good to have something right at hand. And, when I'm preparing to give you a talk and talk in front of you, I have some anxiety about that. And I fret about it a little bit. For this talk, very good. I'm studying how to turn toward myself. So, you know, yesterday I was saying, may I be peaceful? May I be free from anxiety about this talk? May I be relaxed? You know, and it helps. Now, I wouldn't say, I would say it's a good start, but not the be-all and end-all, perhaps. And I have some I have some personal credibility to talk about this subject, because I've been through and I've used many modalities to deal with my own tendency to anger and also towards self-hatred. And, you know, I've used meditation, I've used self-help books, some of which have been very helpful, and also 5 years of psychotherapy. 5 years, continuous psychotherapy, which was very helpful. Very helpful when I had the insight, when I had a strong insight into this barrier that was within me of turning toward myself with animosity, with not trusting myself, with not having confidence in myself, and just plain self-hatred. And so I've worked with those modalities, and I think they're also very helpful. And, you know, when we're done, you know, when we've been through 5 years or whatever, you know, we've read the book and so forth, we can keep this ongoing practice. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be free from suffering. May I be relaxed. May I have faith in my own self-worth. Every, you know, Dogen says something like, you know, no being fails to cover the ground on which he or she stands. No being fails to cover the ground on which he or she stands. So, of course, the text says it would be selfish. It would be selfish to only, practice loving kindness relative to oneself, and that we should extend the practice of loving kindness to the other three types of people. So, and there's a formula for that, too. Just as I want to be happy and not live in pain, fear, or anxiety, so do other beings want to live. What I want and desire for myself, so I want for others' welfare and happiness. So we go on now to break down the barriers, developing loving kindness toward a dearly loved friend, toward a neutral person, and finally towards a hostile person. So this is a little bit, this next section is a little bit of kind of guided meditation, so you can kind of take it in that way. You can kind of do this with me if you like. The text says the first step is to make the mind malleable and pliant. Then bring to mind a dearly loved person, a dearly loved relative or friend. Perhaps this is someone you deeply care about and you know is going through a difficult time, a hard time, some illness, some psychological problem. Giving rise to a deep wish for that dear one's well-being, you may silently say, may he, may she be happy. May he, she be peaceful. May he, she be free from suffering. Take a moment now to think of that dearly loved friend or relative. Silently say his or her name and repeat the formula. May she be happy. May Abraham. May he be free from suffering. May she be free from suffering. Next, you can bring to mind a neutral person. A neutral person is someone, you know, you don't have much of a relationship. Maybe it's like your postman or a clerk you see at the grocery store. You don't know anything really about their lives. But nevertheless, you bring to mind this attitude and this formula. May he, she be free from suffering. May she be happy. May she be peaceful. Bring to mind that neutral person. Extend this wish. Extend this mental attitude that you cultivate yourself and offer it to that person. Person. And this, of course, is the most difficult for us to do. Here is where we may add the practice of patience, the practice of forbearance, to fortify loving kindness. No matter how sorely abused we may feel to give rise to hatred, would not carry out the Buddha's teaching. To give rise to anger, to be ruled by anger, invariably causes further suffering. A sutra says, when you become angry, you are like a person who wants to hit another and picks up a burning ember and so first burns himself. There are many stories in the record of the Buddha about his patience, his forbearance in the face of grave bodily harm, grave injury in his former lives. In one such story, the Buddha, as a bodhisattva in a former life, was a great monkey. And he was doing bodhisattva work in this incarnation, and he rescued a man who had fallen into a deep canyon. And this man turned around and decided that what he should do is kill the monkey and thereby have food so he could continue his journey. And so he took up a big stone and he dashed it against the monkey's head. And the response was that the great monkey looked at him with tears and sorrow, thinking about the negative karma that his attacker was accumulating in trying to kill him. And then, even despite the fact that he was gravely wounded by this blow, he guided this person to his destination, and without giving rise to hate. There are many examples like this in the Buddha's record. So now, maybe fortified by that example, you might bring to mind a hostile, difficult person, someone who has wronged you, it is probably best not to start with the person who did you the greatest harm. Probably best not to start there. Start with someone simply who has perhaps insulted you, perhaps been thoughtless toward you, someone who has been difficult for you, some way has in some way transgressed against you. Pick someone you can honestly say, to whom you can honestly say, may they be happy, may they be peaceful, and free from suffering. With a soft and pliant mind, you wish unlimited happiness for that difficult or hostile person. Take a moment now to say that person's name and wish for their peace and happiness and freedom from suffering. So according to the tradition, the practice of loving kindness towards the four types of persons leads to a great impartiality, so that no difference in loving regard is seen, whether it is oneself, a neutral person, a nearly loved person, or a hostile person. No difference. This great impartiality. This great equanimity. And I think we can bring this kind of teaching to our contemporary concerns. Concerns we have in our society today. Breaking down barriers, seeing no difference in terms of loving regard, whether the object, whether the person be a white person, a dark-skinned person, a black person, a brown person, transsexual person, a gay person, a straight person, whatever kind of person, we can, developing this practice, is really, it's the way that the scripture says to develop impartiality. And to bring benefit to beings. This is the way to do it, according to the Brahmanet Sutra. This is the way to practice. We can aspire to this. And one of the interesting, this is something I really did not know in reviewing the chapter on loving kindness, or on the four immeasurables in this Vasuddhimagga. that the four immeasurables are associated with the states of meditative concentration. So loving kindness is associated with the first jhana, the first meditative trance state, if you will, and then compassion is associated with joy, the second jhana, and the third Ranga Bihara is called sympathetic joy in the success of others, and that's associated with the third meditative concentration, and as you might guess, equanimity is associated with the fourth, which is equanimity. The third is, I don't know if I said it, the third is called bliss or rapture, according to the traditional teaching. So, according to this teaching, according to this older teaching, in Zen, we don't really talk too much about these stages of meditative concentration. But in the older tradition, it says that these practices lead us through these states of meditative immersion, if you will. So these have benefit for all of these four immeasurables have benefit for our own practice, our own deepening of our understanding, our own capacity to enter the Dharma gates. So I thought that's enough for this morning, and then I thought I would talk a little. We're going to have a dialogue in the afternoon, and I thought I'd say a little bit more about the three other immeasurables, and at the beginning of that, and then we'll have a discussion. Then, if there's anything you want to bring up now, you could do so. No, Mary couldn't get that together today. It was.
I've got a phone recording going. But,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
The Sudhimagga. Yeah. In two volumes. There's a fairly recent translation in two volumes. I don't remember who the translator is, but
Do the formulas come from the Sudhimagga, or do they come from something else?
They come from the sutras. The Vasudhimagga is a compendium frequently quotes the source. And they'll have. I don't know if the original version was annotated, but now the translations are annotated, and they tell you where to go if you want to go to the Nikayas or the Agamas.
So the formulas themselves are quoted from some sutra somewhere.
Yeah, some sutra somewhere. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. And many of these, and this idea of the immeasurables being associated with the jhanas comes from the sutras and so forth. So this is a. But what's nice about the Sudhimagga is if you really want to, kind of really get the Buddha's original teaching, like I said, in two volumes, it's a wonderful resource, and it's fairly easy, to read in translation. It has some stilted language and so forth, but not too bad. Secluding the mind from hate is not something that we it's not the way we would phrase things, or these days, but it's actually rather poetic. Seclude the mind from hate and orient the mind. Where did it say? I don't know if it said orient, but introduce. It said introduce the mind to patience as an advantage. Seclude the mind hate as a danger and introduce the mind to patience as an advantage. And, you know, my teacher, Reb Anderson, is constantly talking about this idea of, you know, how do we, how ready are we to be insulted? How ready are we to be abused by another? And he's, you know, he's suggesting, you know, this is kind of an important, skill to develop, you know, upaya, skillful means, how to respond without enmity, because invariably someone is going to say something that's going to cause hurt, right? It's bound to happen. And do, you know, how does our cultivation help us respond to that? It doesn't mean, you know, we have to take it lying down, as they say, but we may develop through our practice some capacity to not, you know, immediately react with animosity or anger, but say, ouch, that hurt. Notice what happens to us first, and tell the person, that hurt. I mean, that's a skill, and depending on the gravity of the insult, you may be able to exercise the skill, or you may not. You know, so you notice that, you know, about your practice, keep working with it.
I've just been noticing during this COVID political polarization time that when I would get to feel helpless, scaring, I would turn towards my practice, which had an incredible impact on changing my consciousness. As well as, you know, it was offering a gift.
That's what the teaching says, that it changes mind consciousness and it offers, you know, the Brahmanet Sutra says the mental attitude of loving kindness, the mental attitude of compassion. And I've been thinking a lot about that, like, what is my mental attitude, you know? And you know, this is really study your mental attitude. What is your mental attitude in the world? And examine it. And if you find it lacking, if you find it, you know, sort of arising out of animosity or hatred, which, you know, many of us were kind of taught that was the way to, you know, confront things. You know, fight back, hit back. The sutra says, you know, if you hit back with anger, it's like a person picking up hot ember. First, you burn yourself. You become, you know, a raging person, and that's hot, and uncomfortable, painful. So, you know, this is, you know, thank you for that comment. This is the mental attitude we study, you know, we study in Zen, what our mental attitudes. And it, when we find through our practice that we give rise to a different kind of mental attitude, maybe even spontaneously, and this is wonderfully confirming that we're on the right path. The only reason I've been able to stay on this path all these years is that practice confirms the truth. Practice confirms the Buddha Dharma. It confirms it. Mm-hmm. in such a deep way that it's undeniable. Yeah, Larry.
Just what you're saying. Practice confirms the truth, and one who picks up the ember burns himself first. So if you're like me and sometimes fool yourself into believing how advanced in practice you have become, and I allow everything with equanimity, you know, I'm so advanced, and then the next day you sit and you find how much you've hurt yourself with those feelings of anger. I mean, the practice confirms, oh, you know, my entire sitting this session is nothing but stewing on what happened maybe a day or two ago, and you see what you do to yourself. So the practice confirms the ember that you pick up.
I think it was Rob Goss, I read somewhere, said, if you think you're enlightened, go spend time with your family.
So those are the dear ones, right? So they're in that category, the dear ones. So, you know, you might think, well, the dear ones, they're dear. I don't have to take up any special practice vis-a-vis those people, but no, that's not right.
I just want to say my dear person was also my hostile person. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The dear person was my hostile person. So, yeah, it doesn't have to be one or the other, you know, people manifest in both ways sometimes. Well, we'll talk more this afternoon, so why don't we go back to our sitting? We have Cindy now.